And I'm coming in the mix, 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 coming in the ready?
You are listening to Roundtable Christianity, a podcast where young Christian ministers and laymen discuss theology, scripture, books, music, and everything else under the sun. Let's dive right in and get started.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Roundtable Christianity. Today we're going to talk about the internet. We're going to talk about what that has to do with our faith and how we can be Christians in this new kind of internet age we're all in. We're really the first generation of Christians to grow up with internet access, which, you know, obviously you know what this is because you're on a podcast, but we're connected in a way that no other generation has ever had. And I kind of think that's a cool thing worth talking about, like, because I think that that comes with some benefits, but I think it also comes with some detractors, some negative aspects to it.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to pros and cons of the internet and us all being connected on a global level, there's a multitude. I think one of the biggest pros is that we have this archive of sermons and biblical knowledge kind of opened up to us. You know, we can go right now and we can read any sermon from Charles Spurgeon just by Googling it, listening to sermons from pastors all across the country. I think that's a great, great pro for the internet. Con, as we've grown up with the internet and, you know, more and more social media things come out, we keep reducing our attention span, how much we take in at a time. And so now we kind of get bored if we can't reduce the gospel to 140 characters. If we don't have just like a quick little quip, then we kind of lose interest. And so that kind of hurts this large archive we have because, yes, we could listen to, you know, a Jonathan Edwards sermon on YouTube or something like that, but we're only going to listen to the first 3 minutes of it, and then we're just going to kind of start looking around the room.
That's interesting because there was like this time where, like, you know, people waited years for new books to come out. It was a big deal to get a book, and that thing would circulate, and that thing would be like a family heirloom. And now it's almost like there's so much out there that it's really just like shifting through dirt, trying to find the few gold nuggets that are there. And so it's like we almost have the opposite problem. Instead of there's not enough information out there, there's too much information, I feel like.
I agree. I know I have like a list of blogs that I check, pretty regularly. And I'm generally tempted to skim through them just because it's good stuff, but it's like, you know, I have like 15 blogs I'm interested in checking out and reading, and so you kind of, you know, you miss out on some really good stuff because you're trying to wade through.
I mean, that's definitely an issue with me. I use an RSS reader called Feedly, so I can just literally just subscribe to anything, and it puts it all in one website for me where I can read them all. I bet you I've got 50, 60 blogs that I read through, and I know for a fact I don't read all those things. I usually look at the title, and if it doesn't seem interesting, I chunk it. And the ones I do read, I'll usually kind of, like Kenneth said, I'll skim read. I like the ones that are 6 things you need to know or 5, you know, fill in the blank, because I can be like, I can read the titles. I'll probably read maybe 10% of everything if I'm being generous to myself.
Yeah, I don't know if when it comes to the internet, there are a lot of like black and white pros and cons when it comes to Christian ministry. I feel like it's just a bunch of gray, you know, like, oh, well, this is a great gift, but at the same time, it takes away from something. You know, I think of things like the fact that we have, like, you know, like I said earlier, we can listen to any pastor in America right now. And so people aren't as interested in their local church bodies because, you know, well, Matt Chandler is their pastor, even though they live in Oregon, you know, things like that. Just a whole bunch of gray.
But on the same side, it's really cool that we have that connectability because while you you know, do have the local churches that you need to be plugged into. You know, today I listened to a sermon from First Baptist Church in the Grand Cayman Islands. You know, there's no way I could have ever done that. Actually, Tabiti's not there anymore. He's doing a church plant in D.C.
Whoa.
Yeah, he moved churches.
I'm so behind on my celebrity pastor.
The celebrity pastors. Yeah, but I mean, like, I can listen to sermons from, like, England. I can listen to sermons from all over the world. And, you know, there is this, I feel like it can actually strengthen the church. I'm talking about the big church, because, you know, we can contact each other so much easier, and we can really form these tight-knit webs that weren't really possible. We used to have to, you know, pay hundreds of dollars or $1,000 to send people to places and then wait for there to get the word back. And now we can just Skype each other.
Yeah, I think it's the internet has brought closeness to the church in a way that hasn't been able to in the past. Like, now we can have conversations with our friends, you know, in other countries just like that. And we don't have to write them a letter or, you know, get to them by boat or anything like that. We can have this instant access to people, which is great for encouragement and just connecting the church together in general. But then also, like, connecting the church globally. Like, you know, we've been reading a lot of articles recently about just the persecution going on in the Middle East. And, like, that allows us to be up to date, and we can pray for and, you know, even support our brothers and sisters going through hard times right now, which wouldn't have been able to have been done even 20 years ago, because we might have heard about it on the news, but it would have taken a lot longer for it to get to us. And now, I don't know, I think it's a good thing. But again, like you said, Timothy, there's some grayness there, and so we have to be careful, because there's also a lot of stuff that isn't so great.
I've noticed that the internet has given a platform for people to express their perspectives and opinions, maybe on a particular thing, like us, right? That you normally, you know, this time 20 years ago, you might not have ever heard a word from them. I think that's a good thing. That more people are able to do that, and we're able to get more nuanced perspectives on more things. But then at the same time, like, that's also a con, because on the same side of the coin, like, there was an article that floated around some form of social media that somebody had posted talking about how Ebola was constructed by Obama. But, like, seriously, like, they, like a whole section of this thing, because I'd open it up just because I was really curious and I thought it was funny. A whole section of this thing was devoted to, like, trying to figure out what Ebola stands for, because apparently it's an acronym, and the B-O had something to do with Obama.
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama, yeah.
There you go.
I forgot his first name.
Yeah. No, but that's a good point, is that one thing that's, like, crazy about the internet is that, one, yeah, like Sheila was talking about, you know, we can get news from, like, Iraq and what's going on in Mosul and all these things that we wouldn't have heard about otherwise. But on the other hand, like, anybody can literally say anything on the internet. Like, there's a big thing going around now where, you know, going back to what she was talking about in Iraq, there's horrible things happening to the church in Iraq that are serious and need attention. But at the same time, there's a big story going around that allegedly this story circulated about how they were beheading children over there. And then it came to facts that maybe that's not exactly true. And maybe that's something someone just made up to make the story seem dramatic. So you do have this, like, openness, but the openness also means you kind of have to second guess everything you read. You know, you can't just take it on face value.
Yeah. And there's a lot of trash on the internet too. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, is seriously just, I mean, it's just like drugs. It's not good for you at all. And we can just fill our mind with that stuff too. I mean, like, I don't know, we were talking about Facebook a couple weeks ago and just how Facebook has ceased to become this means of interacting with people. And now it's just this place where, like, senseless articles are, like, posted all the time. And there's just, like, I don't know, there's so much junk on there that you can literally lose yourself for hours and stuff that's not productive at all.
Yeah, you get on Facebook to read the, like, 25 ways that humans can become dogs or something like that, and you're just like, I have to click it.
You have to click the link.
Wait, why did I do that? Oh, I just wasted time. That's stupid.
That's actually the next point I wanted to bring up, so good segue. let's talk about social media specifically. You know, I'm talking about Facebook, Twitter, I guess Instagram too.
Zanga.
Whoever's on Google Plus, because that's still a thing somehow. But anyway, the point I'm getting at is this, that, you know, there's social media going on, and social media literally lets people just broadcast their lives. And this gives us weird insight to people that we'd never had before. And I think it also opens up this weird thing about human behavior that's never been, because people have never been able to just broadcast their lives like this before. So social media specifically, do you think that's a good thing, a bad thing? Does it help us spread the gospel? Does it hinder us?
I mean, when it comes to the wide spectrum of social media, I mean, I don't know. It goes back to that gray area.
It's like an amoral thing.
It is. Like, there can be people who connect with friends on Facebook and who, you know, message each other like they would never see each other on a daily basis, but now they can talk to one another all the time. You can spread the gospel through that. You can find out about people's lives. You can pray for them. You can look for opportunities to do that. At the same time, you can do nothing for a long time.
Very successfully.
Yeah, very successfully. And so, you know, I'm torn. I almost, because I don't want to just like just do away with it. I don't want to just call it silly or just anything like that, because I feel like there is some good to it. But like you said, an amoral kind of thing. Like, it's just kind of there.
Do you think, because there's a thing I noticed. I'm obviously friends with a lot of Christians. I'm in ministry. You know, I'm friends with ministers and people that are being the faith. So I see people constantly posting, you know, scriptures they're reading or, you know, Christian blogs and stuff like that. I do it myself. Not so much on Facebook, but on Twitter. I still do that a good bit. And do you think that that's even an effective means of reaching people? The thought I'm having when I'm thinking about this is I feel like there's a sense of narcissism that can come with it. I agree that, like, yeah, God can use scripture in powerful ways, and God can use social media to reach people. God could use anything to reach people. But I feel like a lot of times when we do stuff on social media, a lot of people do it because they want the likes, or they want the favorites on Twitter, or they want people to see that they're spiritual, or see that they're reading blogs, or see that they're in the Word. And I feel like that can be a big tendency. I know I've noticed that before, just being in like youth ministry. I've got a suspicion that some of my youth, like, specifically will post things being like, I hope Harden sees this and knows that I listened to his message and that he's going to like the status. So, I mean, like, but I feel like on a bigger scale, I mean, I'm guilty of that too. I posted stuff, and if nobody likes it, I do feel a little disappointed. So you think there's like a narcissism?
Well, the thing is, not much has changed in the past 2,000 years. Like, even the teachings of Jesus, like, addressed this too, not on social media, but he told parables and stories of, you know, people who would, you know, the Pharisees who would pray out loud and who would,
yep,
you know, do their righteousness before other people to get attention. And he said, you've received your reward already. And so, I mean, I think that nothing's really changed as far as the hearts of people go. I think there's just different outlets now. Instead of seeing people, you know, praying aloud on the street corners or being in the synagogue and, you know, doing these great things or performing acts of charity in front of people, we just see people on Twitter.
You know, this is a really good conversation, and I'm not going to lie, I'm feeling really convicted. So I think I'm just going to send out a tweet and just, because I'm just feeling really humbled. Hashtag humbled.
Talk about how convicted you were about your humility.
I'm so convicted about how humble I am.
The old humble brag.
At RT Christianity.
I pride myself in my humility.
And so, like, on the real, I went the whole summer without social media, not because I'm like some spiritual giant or made some like really wise decision. It's because my wife was like, hey, you're on your phone all the freaking time. You need to cut it out. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm going to show you. And I deleted it. And then she kind of won on all fronts, which is, I mean, that's how marriage works. It's just been really good, just because the one thing I noticed, which, like, this is kind of off topic, but the one thing I noticed is, like, I had so much more time, because I could waste so much time and just, like, not having Instagram or Twitter or Facebook on my phone, you know. Like, yes, I might still, like, go to the internet and, like, read an article or read something, but I was way more selective with what I looked at. And when I was with people, I felt more present, because I didn't feel like I have to check Instagram.
But yeah, I have a friend in Hawaii who wrote a blog about a year or so ago, just saying that same exact thing, that she felt disconnected from people. She used to, you know, when she was younger, she had like great conversations with people all the time. Whenever she was out in public, she interacted with people really well, and she was finding she was doing that less and less. And she determined the reason that was because of social media, because she always had her phone in her pocket, always was looking at things, always checking at things, and it made her less aware of the world around her. And so same exact thing, put it away for a year and just engaged in people and conversations in day-to-day life, and it was so much better and so much richer. Not that it's a bad thing, but it needs to be done in moderation for sure.
It seems like it can be a good outlet for people that know how to control the words they say, and they know I can stop this, or I don't have to say this, even though I'm feeling this at this point. But then some people that I've known, I feel like I delete someone on Facebook every time I get on it, because there's always someone that can't. Doesn't seem like they've either lost control or in a emotional state. They've said something I know they shouldn't have,
or they've invited you to play Farmville 100 times in a row,
or Candy Crush Saga,
or any of those games.
And those are people like you've never seen before, but you're friends with somehow.
But one thing that like I want to bring up is like, you know, the recent controversy that I think, you know, when we talk about the internet and ministry that has to come up is Mark Driscoll. You know, he's a guy that, you know, whether you love him or hate him, he was a very prominent minister who has gotten himself in so much trouble because this guy does not know how to use the internet well. Like, this guy has bullied people. He said mean things, said derogatory things on the internet because he has a hard time filtering himself. And I feel like for a lot of Christians, that's a real struggle.
Yeah, I think that brings up another interesting point. Like, I feel that sometimes social media and just the internet in general can show the disunity in the church a lot more vividly than it was in the past. And I don't know, there's just so many arguments and disagreements that occur over the internet between Christians, and the world sees that, and that's a dangerous thing too.
Yeah, and I mean, anytime I get on, like I do get on Facebook, someone has posted an article from the Huffington Post, which is not going to post anything positive about Christianity, but always post this pastor did this, or this person did that, this person said that, because they're all about getting, you know, people to look at their website over controversy between Christians, which is, honestly, it's really pathetic that, I don't know, because, like, Timothy and I were talking about the whole Driscoll thing, and, like, you know, I read a couple, like blogs and articles, and one was like, you know, he did this, it's not that big a deal. And the other one was like, I can't believe he would ever do this. And Timothy made an excellent point of just like, shouldn't he just be completely above reproach in all areas? And like, I think that's where we mess up.
But I feel like the internet, when we don't control our words or don't think about what we're doing on it, it really just gives fuel for the enemies of Christ to really latch on and compile and just store up and then be able to just lambast us every time we, you know, make a mistake.
Lambast.
Great word. Podcast went to the next level.
I got a vocab.
Because it was a similar situation. A bunch of stuff fell through with C.J. Mahaney. And then we're seeing other megachurch pastors that have some kind of internet presence.
Gunger said something. I don't know what. I haven't read it.
Like 2 years ago. That
2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's nothing. Like, you can't delete it. It's on the internet forever. I'm sorry, David. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Well, no. I mean, it's perfect case in point. And, it's great. I don't know. Like, because if I was in a similar situation and I was a pastor and I had a sermon that got put on YouTube or got put out on some kind of website, then all of a sudden it was getting all these hits and all these likes, and I were to see that stat, like, it would be very, like, it would be a battle for me not to take pride in that, like take a lot of pride in that, an excessive amount of pride in that. And the fact is that, you know, there are just some pastors out there, and by the way that they communicate and some of the things they say, they resonate with a large portion of the community. And so they're going to get this following, but then it generates this fame that I don't feel like should be there. And so then it's there whenever, what do you know, when a person's being a person, there's going to be sin. And then now all of a sudden everything hits the fan and things are made a lot worse than they normally would have to be.
Can we talk a little about celebrity preachers? Because I feel like that's an internet thing. You had the revival preachers for a while that would go town to town and kind of build up a name. And then for a while you had the televangelists, which were, I guess, sort of big, but you know, they reached a very specific audience. But now with internet preachers, you know, that's a big thing. You think about, you know, Matt Chandler and Mark Driscoll, and they become massive. What do we make of this trend? Because this has never been a thing before, and I think it's a challenge, one, for those people to still be effective ministers and be a celebrity at the same time, but also I think it promotes, like, weird challenges that I don't know that we've ever had to address before.
I mean, it's definitely there, and the internet definitely contributed to that. It's pretty funny to think about how well we know people who minister in Minneapolis and Los Angeles here in Jackson, Mississippi, and how close we are to them. I think, once again, it has its ups and downs. I think if you have a good, solid, biblically sound preacher, you know, let's have as many people listen to him as possible. Let's make sure that people understand what he's saying, not because of who he is, but because of what he is teaching. At the same time, there's a lot of strange obstacles to overcome with it, like you said. Just this sense of pastoral expectation now, you know, like, am I doing my job well if I'm not a celebrity pastor? And should that be a goal? No. But, like, you know, sometimes it's hard to fight that back, you know, which is just not a thing before, like you said. Like, that's a recent trend. So it's, I don't know, it's an enigma.
Yeah, that's a good thought, because I feel like there's a lot of ministers that are coming up that are anticipating that they are somehow going to become, you know, the next, I don't know, David Platt or something.
Definitely.
You're probably not.
No, definitely.
you might get a small, medium, you might even get a big church, but chances are, you know, unless you just have a real spiritual gift or somehow you're just someone that people latch onto for whatever reason, the majority of ministers are never going to be celebrities.
And, like, that doesn't mean your ministry is less valuable. You know, I think that's what's lost. I'm not saying that you were hinting at that, but I think that's one thing that's lost is that we have this future generation of pastors coming up, or spiritual leaders, whatever the position may be. And I'm sure that we all have that moment at some point or time where we go, man, if I'm the pastor of just this little country church with 50 people, I feel like a failure. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the case, because you are affecting 50 people for the glory of God. And that is a fruitful, valuable ministry that's now getting kind of overlooked.
Yeah, I'm reminded of Wendell Berry when he called out a lot of people who use churches, especially in rural communities, as stepping stones into bigger and better churches in order to blow themselves, you know, up, which, you know, when you have a family and, you know, or, you know, there's calling to consider. And so just because somebody moves from a rural community into a city, or just because the size of a church may be smaller or bigger, doesn't necessarily make it a wrong thing. But, like, that's something that's an idea that's very prevalent. You know, it's just more fuel to add to the pride that was already there, you know. And I don't know, it can get nasty and get tricky.
And like you were saying, it really is wrong to think of people as stepping stones. Like, this is, you know, like, think of this small church as a step up to a big church, or that I'm going to take this church and my goal is to grow this into a mega church. I mean, the goal should always be preach the gospel. And whether that's in a tiny context or a large context, you know, follow God where he leads you in that. But I mean, yeah, it's this internet culture. I really do feel like it's created the idea of the celebrity pastor. And if you don't have, you know, a ton of followers on your blog, or if you don't have a very popular church, or you don't have a really cool church website or something, it's easy to feel like, you know, am I doing what God's called me to the best of my abilities, or, you know, am I doing something wrong?
Yeah, and there's a difference even in that, as you're maybe trying to grow a church or trying to move a church into a place where they better utilize technology. There's a difference between using the internet and using a website to get resources out there to make teachings or studies or books more accessible, or study plans more accessible to the people in your congregation or to, you know, in your community. But that's different than going, putting your sermons on a platform and then, you know, pushing a social media and blogging campaign in order to get more and more followers and push it out into the depths of the YouTube fandom, you know, YouTube fandom.
And we have to remember that, like, the one that we serve is the Lord. You know, we're not doing things to be approved by men. And so that might be a small part. Like, we might have a very small part to play in what the Lord is doing in the world. And so, I mean, even look at scripture. I mean, we talked about how there's not really a example of this, you know, up until today. But I mean, like, even in scripture, you had people like Peter and Paul, who, I mean, in a sense were held as celebrities in the church.
Good point.
But there's a lot of people that weren't Peter or Paul that played a part in sharing the gospel to the nations. Like, one of my favorite people in the Bible is a guy named Ananias, who was the person that went to Paul right after his Damascus Road experience. Like, the Lord used a very small person to impact another person that would impact a lot of people. And so, like, we have to be willing to be the Ananiases of the world. We have to be willing to play a small part, because we're not serving ourselves or we're not serving people. We're serving the Lord ultimately.
And this might bring this whole conversation full circle. I listened to a sermon by Matt Chandler, and the whole point of his message was he was preaching to preachers, and his whole point was, you're not the next anybody. Like, you're not the next Charles Spurgeon. You're not the next Matt Chandler. You're not the next John Piper. If God needed another John Piper, he would have made two John Pipers. He needs you. And I think it's really important to remember that God has gifted us and placed us in certain places so that we can serve him faithfully and not try to serve men or please men or become, like, famous. Which, like, the thought of using the gospel to gain fame is wicked and silly.
Sinful.
And completely sinful.
Okay, so here's another one. Do you think the internet has made us actually more connected, or do you think it has, in the long run, made us more disconnected from each other? I know we touched on this briefly earlier.
I think it's made us more connected to the masses and less connected to individuals. I think that right now I can tweet and, I don't know, something like 420 people will see it.
Yeah.
Only 420?
Yeah, I know, right? Shame is me.
Get with the game. Use more hashtags.
That really is where I dropped the ball. But so, you know, right, which is unheard of compared to past times of Christianity, as we've been talking about. You know, that's a major congregation. You know, 424 people compared to what some of us are working with right now. But at the same time, like, let's take this podcast for example. I mean, like, while each other talks, you know, we all have those moments where we kind of zone out and we look at our phone for a little bit. That happens in everyday conversation. When I try to tell students about, you know, maybe counseling through something, it's not unusual for them to kind of like just phase out for just a second and think about Twitter, Facebook, and then come back. So, connected to the masses, less than individuals.
Well, I mean, even in texting, like, that we have access to each other in a way that could be even unhealthy. We have access to another person, you know, in ways that we never have before. And the social expectations now that have been built around this, we are held by our communities more accountable to keep communication with so many different people more than we ever have before. And you know, no wonder there's so much over anxiety, basically.
That's real. I also think the internet, we haven't really touched on this yet, the internet opens up a whole nother, you know, box of temptations and possibly difficult scenarios for ministers to get into. I know, you know, the fact that we can be connected with anyone at any time, and that for the most part, you know, there's ways to do that very secretly. There's ways to, you know, subvert and get around the public eye, at least we think we do, until it catches up with us and ends up biting us in the butt. I feel like that's a real temptation that hasn't been available to people, you know, in the past. I mean, there's apps like Snapchat, which I don't have on my phone specifically for that reason, that are designed to be able to communicate and link in with people in secret. I feel like we've opened up all sorts of things with this. I mean, not even to mention the fact that, you know, you can literally type anything into your computer and find it,
yeah.
Be it pornography or things you want to steal, files, you know, music, whatnot. Used to be if you wanted to commit theft, the sin of theft, you had to actually go to someone and take something of theirs. You don't have to anymore. You know, if you were going to lust after someone, you know, you couldn't just, like, type in someone into a computer and find images of them 24/7 in your pocket access. So I feel like the internet has, with the good it's brought, it's opened up all sorts of doors to sins that used to be further out of reach, I guess, is the best way I could put it.
I mean, I'll give you a kind of example for that. You know, the church I work at right now is a smaller country church. It's kind of in the backwoods, so a lot of the kids don't have internet at their houses. They don't have smartphones. And, you know, like, pornography in the youth group, it just, like, I mean, of course it's there and needs to be discussed, but it's not just this overwhelming problem like it has been at some of the youth groups that I worked at. Just because they're not going to, you know, fill out a form and order a Playboy to get at their house, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that instant access is cut off, and to while now they still deal with lust, it's not this rehab for pornography. And, you know, there's a wide array of examples, like you said, theft, all kind of things that are connected to that. It is really interesting, though. So much good comes with so much temptation.
Yeah, and here's another interesting, I don't know, phenomenon we're seeing now is that, okay, so when I was growing up, you know, whenever the internet first came out, you know, we had a computer in our house, but we had the one that was dial up and took 20 minutes to set up, and so
the whole house knew.
Yeah, and
the phone wouldn't work if you're on.
And so, you know, we had internet and we had access to, you know, even some of these things, but it was incredible. It was still hard to get to, but now it's more accessible. And not only is it more accessible, but it's accessible to younger people. Like, the average age of, like, first exposure to porn now is so incredibly young, and it blows my mind the fact that, I mean, little children are getting exposed to things on the internet, you know, not just porn, but, like, this whole world of stuff, and, like, are growing up in that.
Just because they misspelled DisneyWorld.com.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it's like, stuff like that. Yeah, seriously. I mean, like, I know that there may have been a resurgence of, you know, or some kind of containment of this, but, like, literally, you know, there would be industries that would utilize misspelled words of popular titles.
That's horrible.
I mean, but that's just the kind of stuff that we're running into.
Yeah. And, I mean, even getting away from pornography, which is a massive, you know, horrible thing that needs to be dealt with, I feel like what's interesting about the internet is, in for many cases, it removes the risk that would normally hinder someone from committing a sin. You know, a lot of times you might not risk slandering someone because you're worried by you bringing that up, it's going to reflect you badly. But if you're anonymous, you can do it all you want. We talked about theft. I've had to talk with, you know, some of my youth that, you know, these are Christian kids that they don't even understand that taking something that you didn't pay for, that someone, they make their living off of producing this, and going through some third-party site to get it for free, they don't understand what's morally wrong with that. They don't understand that they're taking someone's livelihood away from them. And I think the big reason is because, yeah, the internet puts so many barriers between you and the people that you're affecting with the things you're doing that it doesn't even seem real. Like, you're not having to look at anybody's face, or you're not actually having to physically commit, you know, these act yourself. You're able to do it in cyberspace, and somehow that makes it easier for us. All right, for just kind of a topic to kind of go out on, I think this is something that I hope we can all really say that we struggle with. Otherwise, I'm going to feel really bad about myself, is that I think it's very hard to stay Christ-centered and Christ-focused with so many distractions that have been brought out with technology. Like, it is so easy for me. And sometimes it's even like Christ-centered things. This is ridiculous for me, but sometimes I will listen to, you know, some Christian podcast and read Christian blogs and, you know, be tweeting scripture and doing things like that, so much so that I have forgotten to pray, you know, until I get home, you know, from work and realize I haven't even talked to God today.
That's hard. I mean, through discipline, through shutting your phone off. I know a lot of pastors and people I respect do a tech Sabbath. So, you know, and that's usually in conjunction with their regular Sabbath. So whatever day they take off from working, they turn their phones and computers off and things like that too, and just spend time with themselves and the Lord and with family. And so I think that's one way that we can start to institute that in our life, taking one day out of the week and not using technology at all, or using it for the bare minimum.
First of all, I think that's a good, very, very good idea. Because of the internet, we have become more focused on quantity rather than quality. So we don't simply want a outlet of social media. We want access to all the social medias. You know, we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of it, YouTube account. We'll read 50 blogs instead of like two or three that are really high quality, things like that. And so I think, like, if we switch that around a little bit, you know, okay, so you're on the internet, you're enjoying these kind of outlets. Let's narrow those down to the ones that you're really getting fruit from, that you're really benefiting from, that you're really enjoying. You know, stop wasting your time on this one, or, you know, this website's just going to frustrate you, but you just kind of like it. You know, let's turn that off, get away from that. Just focus on the good.
Yeah, I think one thing that I've struggled with this is kind of what Sheely talked about, how, you know, taking a fast from these things. I've tried to do that in the past, and it's a lot harder, I think, than we even realize it will be until you actually try to do it. Like, I encourage all the listeners that are doing this to take an internet fast at some point in the near future and just see if you can go a day without logging on to Facebook or Twitter or Googling something or reading a blog or, you know, doing all these things. You don't realize how addicted you are to being constantly entertained. And a thought I've had is, you know, you read the Bible about all these people that, you know, heard the voice of God and they, you know, had these great relationships where they walked with the Lord and things like that. And I've legitimately wondered, because I've had this constant internet access since I was at least 15. You know, I think we got it when I was 12. I didn't really use it much until 15 or 16. But sometimes I wonder, you know, would my walk with the Lord be better if I wasn't constantly, you know, seeking my entertainment and seeking my fulfillment in a screen?
Dude, I'll echo that. My best summer that I've had was when I did summer missions and I worked at a camp in New Mexico where my phone didn't work, data wouldn't, you know, find me, and we didn't have internet access of any kind. And I just, I don't know, I read so many books and I just grew so much in my walk, and it was just that time where I said, okay, when I'm getting back home, I'm not going to get distracted, I'm just not going to do it. And then, like, you know, a week later you fall back into it, you're on Twitter again and your attention spans, yeah, exactly. 140 characters or less, those are all the books that I read now. And it's just, I don't know, it's sad to me. I really do. I do think that our walks would be better if we just took a step back from it. While it's very, very good, there's a lot of pros to the internet, and it has a lot of fruit from it. I mean, maybe just need to take a step back.
Mm-hmm. I think that pretty much wraps up this podcast telling you to get off the internet.
Yeah, take a fast until next podcast.
Until the next podcast.
And then come back on.
I realize the irony of this. But let's do some closing thoughts, and then we'll come back with some recommendations of things you might want to check out.
I feel that there's a lot of good that comes from the internet. I am very thankful for it. I see it as a gift. At the same time, there are definitely many obstacles to overcome with it. While it is good, I think it would benefit us all just to take a step back and to limit how much we stay connected.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the words of Paul where he says, like, everything is permissible for me, but not everything is beneficial. And so, I mean, I think that's true for the internet. It is a huge monstrosity of a thing that, I mean, there's nothing inherently sinful about the internet, but be careful. Don't let it rule your life. Don't let it be don't let it distract you from the Lord.
I think the internet, as we've discussed, is an amoral, neutral thing that can be used for great, great good and also a lot of evil. So, I mean, as you approach the internet, before you start typing, check your heart, check your relationships, check your time. Are you wasting it right now or actually doing good? You know, engage in the information that's available to you, learn, grow, but don't get sucked in because the world is going on around you while you are staring at a computer screen.
The internet really isn't reflective of reality in a lot of ways. I mean, you don't, if we're honest, you don't have, you know, 1,000 friends. You have maybe 20, you know, maybe less, if you're being really honest. You don't have, you know, several hundred followers. You have maybe a dozen or so people that are kind of interested in what you might have to say in 140 characters or less. And really, I think the internet is such a big time suck. Like, it can eat away your life if you let it. I'm going to take Sheely's advice that he said earlier and really try to carve out chunks of my day and days out of my week where I am just not plugged in. Because I feel like for a lot of us, you know, I would hate to reach, you know, my olden days and look back and realize I spent years staring at something that I'm not going to remember in 15 minutes. Just be aware that, you know, life is going on and it can pass you by if you're not careful.
Hey, Roundtablers, I got a music recommendation. Check out the band Kai Kai. That's K-Y-E space K-Y-E. They have a fantastic new album out called Fantasize. If you like electronic, synthy, dreamy, spacey kind of music that's kind of pleasant, good for a rainy day, check them out. Fantastic.
All right, guys, this is Harden, and I don't really have any books or music to recommend, but since we are talking about the internet, one thing I wanted to bring up is there's a really good free service on the internet. It's called K9 Web Filter, and what this is it's a filter that you can install on any internet browser, and you can edit the settings to do what it will block and what it will not allow you to get into. You can even block things for certain chunks of time if you know you have to be productive at this point in the day and you don't want access to something. You can block it for that. I think everybody should personally have this, if for nothing else, because there are certain things on the internet that no one should ever go to that always need to be blocked and always need temptation off. But it's a good productivity tool. So it's a free service. Check it out. It's K9 Web Filters.
All right, everybody. Well, that concludes this episode of Roundtable Christianity. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at RT Christianity. If you'd like to email us a question that we could discuss on the show, you can email us at askroundtablechristianity@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again next week.